In January 2024, researchers from Tianjin University and the Georgia Institute of Technology published a paper on semiconducting graphene. Graphene is an interesting material, and people have been looking at how to incorporate it into transistors to create the next generation of electronics. When this research was first published back in January, it got a lot of attention, and I was asked to take a look. It took some time, but here we are. In this video, we break down this recent discovery and also examine slightly the dream of the GFET. This video is brought to you by the Asianometry Patreon. It's one of the better ways to support the channel. Early access members get to see new videos first and selected references. It really helps a lot, and I appreciate every pledge. Thank you, and on with the show. Graphene is a sheet of carbon atoms arranged in a hexagonal lattice, kind of like a honeycomb. It is atomically thin, literally a single atom thick, so about 0.335 nanometers. Thusly, people classify it as a 2D material. Others include silicene, which is made from silicon, and germanine, germanium. It can be rolled into nanotubes, a 1D material, or turned into a 0D buckyball. Graphite itself is apparently a 3D layered stack of graphene held together with van der Waals forces. Didn't know that. Graphene was first isolated in 2004 by two scientists at the University of Manchester, Andre Geim and Konstantin Novoselov. They later won the 2010 Nobel Prize in Physics for their discovery. Remarkably, they did it by using a piece of scotch tape to cleave off flakes of graphene from graphite. It is called the scotch tape method and works surprisingly well. No million-dollar semiconductor equipment necessary. Graphene has many interesting properties, and if you want to hear all about it, the Wikipedia is extremely, extremely comprehensive. But our goal here is to learn those properties related to transistors. Graphene is most often noted for how fast charge carriers like electrons or electron holes can travel through it, a property known as charge carrier mobility. The charge carrier mobility of pure graphene, pure meaning no contaminants, is ridiculously fast, measured at anywhere from 10,000 to 15,000 square centimeters per volt second. Even higher, based on specific conditions, scientists at Columbia and Bell Labs found that if you suspended the graphene, the mobility is 200,000 square centimeters per volt second. By comparison, silicon's intrinsic mobility is 1,400 square centimeters per volt second for electrons, and 450 square centimeters per volt second for electron holes. So graphene is anywhere from 7 to 140 times faster than silicon. Why is this mobility such a big deal? Over the past few decades, fabs sped up the switching speeds of their silicon MOSFETs by both shrinking the size of the transistors as well as the distances between them. Nowadays, however, silicon transistors struggle to scale this way because they are already so small, leading to short channel effects, which are negative effects that lead to excessive power consumption. The high-level thinking is that we can leverage graphene's fast charge carrier mobility for ultra-fast digital electronics, faster than what can be made with silicon. This is the dream of the graphene field effect transistor, or GFET. A field effect transistor is named as such because it uses the field effect. An external electric field helps toggle a semiconducting material's ability to conduct a flow of electrons or electron holes. In its most basic form, a graphene-based field effect transistor would have a source and drain with a strip of graphene spanning the two. This transistor structure sits on top of some metal, silicon dioxide or silicon carbide, to both electrically isolate it and give some structural stability. Like any good recipe, what is used depends on the proposed transistor concepts. Field effect transistors require a gate to control a flow of charge carriers. Where we place this gate in relation to the channel depends, again, on the recipe. Most silicon planar MOSFETs are top-gated, meaning that the gate sits on top of the channel. More advanced MOSFETs have different shapes. The first fabricated GFETs were bottom-gated, meaning that the gate sits below the graphene channel layer. This was mostly for practical reasons. Early on, students isolated graphene using the scotch tape method and this bottom gate arrangement worked best for them. The Hasnew, more advanced methods of producing graphene came about, mostly based on chemical vapor deposition. We have seen new gate arrangements emerge, like side-gated and top-gated GFETs. I like the side-gated GFETs, they look kind of cool. The most frequently cited issue with graphene and the GFET, and this is tied to the recent January 2024 news breakthrough, is band gap. A band gap refers to an energy gap between a material's conduction and valence bands. Electrons usually hang out in the valence band. When they travel and do the conduct electricity thing, they do it through the conduction band. Semiconductor materials like silicon or germanium have conduction and valence bands that do not overlap, as in, there's a gap in the bands. Band gap, get it? When sufficient energy is applied, the electrons jump the band gap from the valence band into the conduction band. Thusly, the silicon transforms from an insulator into a conductor. Graphene's valence and conduction bands touch at 6 points, which are called Dirac points, but there is no gap. Pure graphene not having a band gap makes it interesting for photonics, sensors, and other things, but it also means that if you use it in a field effect transistor, then you get a faucet that you cannot shut off. Modern digital logic chips are based on the complementary metal oxide semiconductor, or CMOS, paradigm, which consists of a pair of P-type and N-type MOS transistors. CMOS is dominant today because of its low power consumption, which in turn depends on the power not flowing through the transistors when they are off. So not being able to shut off the current makes graphene FETs impractical for digital logic. Okay, the lack of a band gap sucks, and everyone knows it. However, there are workarounds. Right off the bat, you can produce a transistor that does not use the field effect. Maybe one that takes advantage of a quantum effect called Klein tunneling, where electrons somehow quantum tunnel through a graphene barrier. I shall say no more of this for fear of entering the quantum realm. There are also a few scenarios where you can engineer a band gap in graphene. For example, theory implies that you can make a band gap by quote-unquote straining the graphene, meaning applying some force to stretch or shrink its lattice. A strain of 12 to 20%, which is possible but extremely difficult. Or you can pattern the graphene into very narrow nanoribbons, about 5 nanometers wide. This creates a behavior that sort of resembles a band gap because of something called the quantum confinement effect. The issue with these known methodologies is you cannot produce a good band gap without also hurting graphene's incredible charge carrier mobility. For example, skinny 5 nanometer wide nanoribbons are intuitively harder for charge carriers to travel through. This missing band gap has remained an issue for some 20 years, and this is what the January 2024 announcement by the Georgia Tech Tianjin University team is about. Roughly speaking, there are two major schools of thought in graphene electronics research. There's one group exploring the use of chemical vapor deposition, or CVD, to deposit graphene onto certain metals and experimenting with the result. Exploring graphene's applications to things like solar cells or touchscreen components, searching for possible cost reduction opportunities. But there's a second school of research emerging from the work of Georgia Tech's Walter Dahir. Their focus is on epitaxial graphene laid onto a substrate of silicon carbide. Epitaxial refers to epitaxy, a type of semiconductor manufacturing deposition technology. This type of deposition is notable for how it aligns the crystal structure of the deposited layer to the substrate. A recipe for epitaxial graphene on silicon carbide was first discovered in 1975 by a scientist named A.J. Van Bommel. He produced this epitaxial graphene by first heating silicon carbide to a high temperature, about 1000 Kelvin. This causes the silicon atoms in the uppermost layer of the very flat silicon carbide wafer to sublimate, or go directly from a solid to a gas without turning into a liquid in between. The silicon going away leaves behind a layer of carbon atoms, which then recrystallizes as graphene. In between the silicon carbide layer and the epitaxial graphene layer, we have a layer of special graphene-like carbon. They call this carbon layer the buffer or zero layer. The carbon atoms in it is a bit special, organized in a hexagonal structure like normal graphene, but with some bonded to the silicon carbide substrate. Research in the late 2000s hinted that this buffer layer might have semiconducting properties. The problem has been producing it in high enough quality and quantity. The original Van Bommel epitaxy method leaves the layer too disordered and chaotic, probably because we are sublimating silicon off the original surface, and that subtraction process doesn't go orderly. So what the Georgia Tech Tianjin team discovered is a tweak to create a more orderly buffer layer of what they are calling semiconducting epigraphene, or SEG. I'm summarizing, but the method consists of having two silicon carbide chips, a seed and a source, facing one another. They are placed inside a crucible where they are subjected to high heat via induction and McCarthyist accusations in a careful sequence of steps. When done right, a slight temperature difference between the two chips will cause carbon atoms to travel over from the source to the seed's surface, forming the SEG. This method reminds me of physical vapor deposition, another semiconductor methodology. I have a few concerns about defects and coverage of step structures, but that probably can be worked on later. Anyway, the resulting SEG material is indeed semiconducting, with a band gap of about 0.6 electron volts, roughly about the same as germanium's. By comparison, silicon has a band gap of about 1.12 electron volts, and silicon carbide's is 3.26 electron volts. And with one caveat, which we will talk about in a bit, the SEG material also retained graphene's superior charge carrier mobility, about 4,000 to 5,000 square centimeters per volt second. So that's nice. Theoretically, this SEG material can go into a GFET channel between the source and drain, then voila, you have a ridiculously fast switching transistor. There are a few things I want to note, though. One thing is that the band gap is not particularly large. I mentioned it was similar to germanium's. Does that imply that SEG transistors might suffer some of the downsides of germanium transistors, like their instability at relatively low temperatures? Another thing is that caveat I earlier mentioned. The team inserted the SEG material into a top-gated GFET and tested it. The GFET switched on and off, which is good and largely confirms that SEG has a band gap. The issue was that the field effect mobility, meaning how fast the carriers moved through the transistor, was about 22 square centimeters per volt second. This was nearly 200 times slower than what they know the material can do. Considering that silicon MOSFETs do anywhere from 200 to 600, though this depends on the configuration and how you define your measurement, this is not ideal. The Tianjin, Georgia team believes that this is due to the transistor's choice of dielectric insulating material, which brings up the other issues relating to putting this thing into an integrated circuit. Interconnects in particular come to mind. It's also worth to mention that general semiconductor theory implies that electron mobility declines as the band gap grows. Considering the growing importance of power consumption for data center products, I don't think customers will accept faster switching speeds if it also comes at the expense of immense power consumption. The R&D roadmap of transistor technology seems fairly clear for the next 5 or so years. After that, it's all speculation. The current consensus is that after the gate-all-around transition, there's the forksheet transistor and then complementary FETs, and 2D-based transistors would follow after that, if at all ever. Graphene is the first 2D material to be isolated, and perhaps the one most people think of for use in semiconductors, but there are others. Over 100 are listed in the Atlas of 2D materials. Several show more potential than graphene. One that comes to mind are the transition metal dicalcinides, or TMDs. They're a class of 2D material made from a combination of transition metals and chalcogen pair. They're also plentiful while also exhibiting a small natural band gap of 1 to 2 electron volts, and people have been successfully inserting them into transistors. The Tianjin Georgia group argue that their SEG material is the only one with, quote, all the necessary properties to be used in nanoelectronics, and its electrical properties are far superior to any other 2D semiconductors currently in development. I am not too sure about that, considering the progress in TMD 2D transistors. But regardless, every 2D material, graphene included, remains in the lab, years away from the fab. The search marches on. Let us check back later in the decade. Alright everyone, that's it for tonight. Thanks for watching. Subscribe to the channel, sign up for the Patreon, and I'll see you guys next time.